Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Matt Neely. Good to see Matt.
How you doing, Bill?
Hey, great to see you, Matt. Normally, Matt doing, of course, the very early, the morning show, and he's with me today and ready for me to ask him about whether he likes fruitcake. And, well, today's National Fruitcake Day. Have you ever had a piece of fruitcake that made you say, well, I'd like a second piece?
Well, I'm not running for office, so I can take a stand on this one. I'm the anti-fruitcake camp.
Really?
Yeah, I've never really gotten that into it.
I've had a few that were very moist and tasty, so I think I could probably be on the positive side
okay.
on the fruitcake thing. Anyway, we are off and running. It is Wednesday, December the 27th, 2023. Hope everybody had a lovely Christmas and Boxing Day. So we took Christmas off, and we also took yesterday off, which is the Boxing Day holiday in the British world. I like Boxing Day. It's just a chance to kind of unwind from the big day. We have some exciting news. We'll begin year 14 of our radio project on Tuesday, January the 2nd. So we started the radio project 2011. And so we're going to launch into year 14. And then it was, we'll start into the 36th year in Tucson Media. I drove into town, actually. There'd been a big snowstorm on Christmas in 1987. Paul Cunningham's with me in studio, and Paul probably remembers it. It was a pretty good snowstorm. So I drove into town from the Bay Area to launch into, been newly hired to take over Arizona Illustrated at Channel 6. You remember that. There was a lot of snow on the ground. I did my TV last show on Christmas Day in San Jose on TV, then the next morning, day after, I hit the road for Tucson. So I think I drove into town on the 27th in 1987, and there was a lot of snow on the ground.
That was one of them. I actually remember, I want to say 13 or 14.
Yeah.
I was in Nogales, Arizona, and I mm-hmm. woke up to a white Christmas.
Wow.
And I don't know if it had hit Tucson, but I do remember 13 or 4. I want to say it was 14. We had a full white Christmas in Nogales, Arizona.
Yeah, I think we had a little snow in 2014 here on Christmas. We're in the Green Thing Zilcalo Village studio, the radio station 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Tucson's only source for live local news talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, which also, speaking of starting in 2011, I think we've got at least 96-97% of every show. A lot of content-rich stuff there on the buckmastershow.com website. And when we do our telephone interviews, our thanks to Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Paul Cunningham is the newly reelected Democrat congressman. I just elevated you. That was your Christmas gift. Councilman representing Tucson's Ward 2. And he's the first person to win all six wards. Is that correct?
In a contested race.
In a contested race.
Right. I think that's, yeah.
Well,
it was by the skin of my nose. I think Ward 4 has predominantly been challenging for anybody with a Republican party label to win. Excuse me, anybody with a Democratic Party label to win in Ward 4. But this year, I think partly because there was a third candidate, I actually squeezed that by, according to Sam Almy, by about 24 votes. So I thought that was really interesting. I also was fortunate enough to win my ward by about 19 points, mm-hmm. and I'm really proud of that accomplishment.
And then I was surprised after 20 years of failure, the effort to give the mayor and the council people a raise passed.
Yes,
I guess it's not official. The Chris Mays, who was on our show a couple of weeks ago, said they hadn't really gotten to looking whether or not that a recount would be necessary. It was within 300 votes or something.
So it's within the new statutory margin. It's not within the old statutory margin. According to our attorney, the new statute doesn't apply to this. The old statute might have, but it was a gray area. Anyway, all that stuff is aside. I don't care whether we do a recount or not. I just want to make sure we're doing what the rules actually say.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything is about an election integrity right now.
Mm-hmm.
Election integrity is the most important thing we have. The common sense would be just to say, do the recall anyway. But, I mean, the recount anyway. My answer is, yeah, that's a common sense move. The problem is that we have a strict series of rules that to trigger recounts and such that needs to be adhered to. Otherwise, we get into these things where every single time a person wins an election, they absolutely believe they broadcast ideas that they think it was fixed or there were transgressions. But when they win, obviously that didn't happen. And so I don't want to be in that situation. I'm very humbled that the race passed. It means a lot, and it definitely is something else. But at the same time, I just want to make sure that the election and all the procedures that go into the election is followed to the T.
You've been an educator for 10 years. You love teaching kids. You love athletics. You're very much involved with youth sports. You'll have a difficult decision, I'm assuming. I would assume you're going to finish at least the school year.
Yes.
And then make a decision whether you still want to do some teaching, right?
Well, I'll definitely finish the school year. For 24-25 school year, that's a different discussion. Mm-hmm. You know, we get our contract renewal. And this is assuming that the recount's done and the raise is passed. If we're still in limbo, I'm going to sign my another teacher contract. But if we're out of limbo, then obviously we'll definitely assess. I'd really like to help the community. I'd really like to continue teaching. But at the end of the day, the raise passed by the voters.
Yeah, voters want a full-time councilman.
So I need to honor that and honor my public service. I've spent my whole life in public service.
Yeah.
I was in the National Guard when I was 18. I was a juvenile probation officer. I've been a teacher. And now I've been an elected official and a teacher.
Mm-hmm,
And so I've done all these things in public service. It's kind of my whole life. And for me, you have to honor that piece. Mm-hmm. And look, it's not supposed to be a vow of poverty or anything, but you're not supposed to be running around trying to make a whole bunch of money off this. Mm-hmm. You just keep doing the next right thing. One of my mentors in teaching was a guy named Mike Gordy, and he passed during COVID. And every single time I'd talk to him, he'd say, "Well, Paul, I just want to make sure you're going to do the next right thing." Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm going to do for this too. Mm-hmm. And if in my heart, I think it's part of the public service to continue to teach even part-time or a couple periods or maybe just be a coach or something, I will. If I don't, then I won't.
It sounds like Mr. Gordy had a real true ethical compass.
Oh, man, he was one of a kind. He was a longtime teacher, longtime educator. He was a true believer in people, and he was a true believer that everybody, if they kept going to the next day, could be better the day after.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what it was. I was at a very challenging time in my life when he kind of took me under his wing and told me some of these things. And I take some of his lessons every single day. I was never his student, but I've talked to his past students. And even when I first started teaching, I was a PE teacher first, and then I got into the classroom, which is a different animal. The work is still hard in both cases. If you ask classroom teachers, they'll tell you that PE teachers have it easy. If you talk to PE teachers, they'll say, well, classroom teachers might have. And so that being said, Mr. Gordy was very good at telling me the best way to connect with kids, and the best way to manage that classroom was to just be organized and do the next right thing. And I brought that with my lessons every day.
Well, it sounds like Mr. Gordy came into your life at just the right time, correct?
I can say that is very true. Very
right.
True.
Let's take a break right here. We'll have more with Tucson City Councilman Paul Cunningham. We'll talk with the councilman about what's the big story out of the council in 2023, and what will the big story be in 2024? Quick mention about Mona's Danish Bakery. Mona's wants to wish everybody a very happy holiday season. They had a great Christmas season, thanks to, thanks to a lot of our listeners who have discovered Mona's through the Buckmaster Show. And Mona's is open right now for lunch. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open for breakfast 6:30 in the morning. Their website, monasdanishbakery.com. The Buckmaster Show rolling along on this, I want to say it feels like a Monday, but it's already the midweek between Christmas and New Year's. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, a midweek edition. Paul Cunningham is with me in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. A big shout out to Green Things. Boy, they had a wonderful holiday season. I love it when my sponsors say, please thank everybody. Things went very well for us over the holidays. So gladly, I will pass that along. And we talked for weeks about the 21,000 poinsettias that were grown at Green Things, 3384 East River Road. I'm telling you, those poinsettias cheered up a lot of people, including yours truly. Jan and Jack gifted me with a couple of beautiful, trying to keep them alive and doing what they told me, like watering them well every other day. But sure cheered up a lot of people and brought holiday cheer to many with those colorful plants. GreenThingsAZ.com and their sister business, ZocaloVillage.com. I'm telling you, Zocalo Village has the largest selection of pottery that I have ever seen. I mean, it's incredible. It's not just from Mexico. They've got pottery that is from the island of Crete. Their website, ZocaloVillage.com. All right. Our lifeline for our telephone interview is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Paul Cunningham is with us, newly reelected in November, the Democrat councilman representing Tucson's Ward 2. When looking back over 23, what was the big story for the city of Tucson?
Oh, wow. I mean, I don't even know if the biggest story
moving ahead with climate stuff, would that be something?
I mean, it ended up not being that controversial. I think the big one was probably the ongoing disagreement about water rates. And I think that my big focus has been the municipal and county relationship that I think has improved a lot, but I still think we've got. We really want cities and municipalities and towns to be doing cities and municipality town stuff, and we want counties to be doing county stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think we're making that progress. I think the other big piece, the biggest issue we faced was absolutely the unsheltered and rising crime rates, which have subsided since then. But that was the big thing we entered into. And I think there's a shift right now with people for 24. Because I know what your next question is.
Of course.
So the big story was that unsheltered piece, and a lot of people kind of down and
getting
out.
The unhoused into some kind of housing, right?
Yeah, but it was also there was a housing crisis. There was big inflation. There was all these different factors that led to people being either underhoused or unhoused. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing this paradigm shift kind of after the post COVID hangover, right? So it's the hangover after the hangover, which isn't a hangover. I mean, it's not the best word for it, but I'm flat on my feet here. So the bottom line is that for 24, we're going to see this shift where a lot of folks are coming back in. They're on the climb. Mm-hmm. They're starting to hold it down again. They're saying, hey, maybe there's a way to figure this out. Some of the rent costs have either flattened and in some cases have gone kind of fallen back down to earth a little bit. So I think all these things are kind of happening. And ultimately what I think that's going to end up is that we won't have a labor shortage again. We'll actually have people rejoining the labor force, and ultimately the paradigm will shift back into worrying about helping people get jobs. Mm-hmm. And that's how it goes. I mean, it ebbs and flows like that all the time. So the other piece is that a lot of different jurisdictions, counties, cities, and even the feds and the state had leftover federal COVID money in 23, a lot in 21. But a lot of the people have kind of run out. Our manager was very big on squirreling some of that away. So we've got some left to do some of the things we're doing, but some of it is use or lose. And there's some, so I think those are the things that are going to challenge the council. What's interesting is sometimes the things most in our mind are not the big stories. I think the unsheltered was in 23. Mm-hmm. It was the big story for a while.
And the underlying current of the crime piece.
Right. And then people kind
of
got
Tucson is an unsafe city. Many people think
and there was a time when if you looked at our rates around the country, you definitely had cause for alarm. Right now, I think Chief Casmar's done a great job in ensuring some stability in our force readiness. We have all the folks we have. We've also had a culture shift in TPD. We've just got some of the best and most well-trained police officers. We've also expanded that CSO program. And as a result, you've seen violent crime drop over the past year. You've even seen property crime drop over the past year. So it's nice to see. The job's never done. I think that right now, I think a lot of this stuff comes into the public health arena, and comes into the correctional arena. And that's when I'm talking about county stuff and city stuff. The correctional arena, at least community corrections, when it comes to a jail, is a county function, and public health is also a county function. And we as a city needed to support them in their mission as much as possible.
Do you have any thoughts on the building, possibly building a new jail?
Well, I mean, that's going to require the will of the voters. That's going to require
if it's a
number of different
things. Sales
yeah, it's going to require a number of different
things.
Would seem
like very tough sledding.
Yeah, so I don't think that that's – I don't know if that's – I don't know if that's going to be the best chance. But then again, I'm the one who didn't think the Rays would pass either. But the bottom line is that we still have to do some things within the jail that – I think we've had in the past, including in custody detox and maybe some a drug court pod or a drug court unit where you can do rehab while you're in custody. I think there's some opportunities there. I know that the sheriff has been working on some of these things to try to get them going. So we'll see kind of what happens with all that. But at the end of the day, if we're not fully staffed and we don't have those things going, it's hard to do the other pieces. And that's just unfortunately how it is in Arizona. So those, I think, are the kind of the community overlay pieces for the next year. And I think the other piece that we're going to have in the next year is discussion on finalizing RTA next and what's in and what's out and what's allowed and what isn't. And I think that conversation right now has shifted from being very adversarial to being very, very friendly and very productive. And so I was the biggest critic of RTA Next.
Yeah, you really were.
For a while. And I think they're really trying to get their ducks in a row to give us a package that's
that
good for Tucson and Pima County.
They have something for everybody, really.
Well, they're doing their best. And, yeah. And it's we've got such amazing people on that committee, and we've got a great chair who's a Republican. Well, I'm a Democrat, but we get along, and we talk. We leave the lines of communication open, and that's what it's all about. And if we can get these things kind of ironed out, I think the package will be responsible. It'll be responsive to transit. It'll be responsive to maintenance. It'll be responsive to modernization. And it will also give us access in some of the places that we can't get to right now. And so I think they've done a great job trying to hold that stuff in balance. And I look forward to that dialogue in the next 6 months.
That's going to be a big story, transportation in 2024. All right. You have anything? There was a story in the paper, I think yesterday, about contractors who work for the city are going to be paid the going wage, basically.
Right.
And the council signed off unanimously on that. It's the going wage, basically, what is considered industry standard. Is
right.
That kind of it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good measure, but I think it has to come with some procurement reform. I think we don't give enough vendors a chance to bid on things in Tucson. I'd like to change some of our procurement requirements so that instead of getting two or three bids from the same firms every single time we put something out to bid, I want like 75, 80 bids. I want as many people with the opportunity to bid as possible. I think that's better for the competitive rate, and I'd like to see that go on. I'd also like to set up a minimum. So in other words, we have an estimator pre-bid that seals the maximum cost of a project, and if none of the bids fall under that maximum cost, then we pull and reissue the bid. I think sometimes we're getting some bids that are coming in just a mite high, and I'd like to kind of have a little procurement reform so that we're making the best use. It'll help us probably reduce the costs with the prevailing wage ordinance we just passed, which is, again, just basically saying people deserve to get paid what they're supposed to get paid.
Yeah, and before we go, kudos to Mike Ortega. He's put together, and I've interviewed, I think, most of the cabinet members, everybody from the arborist. City of Tucson has I was so impressed with this young lady that is kind of overseeing our tree canopy work.
Mm-hmm.
And other people that Mike has brought in from parks, procurement. He's got a really good cabinet.
Oh, man, this team is amazing. John Kamik has done a great job taking over for Tim Tomier. Tomier is a visionary deputy director.
He is.
You got Liz Morales, who came in from HCD. She's now a deputy manager, and she's borderline brilliant. She's like a housing savant. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then you've got Lara Hamway. We got her from Florida.
Right.
I don't even know how we got her to come
here. I was
here.
Impressed with
and
her.
And she is just so responsive, and she's not She never lets ego get in the way. She's just mm-hmm. so responsive. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Kazmar, like super chief. I mean, he's just, and then Chuck Ryan is just a rock star.
Yeah, you know,
he's a Pepperdine educated lawyer.
Yeah, he's
as
really,
well as being a
then
fire,
the lady
fire
that
chief.
Was brought in, she was head of Nevada's DMV.
Yeah, Christina Swallow. So she's born and bred Tucson too.
Very impressed.
She went to UHS.
She's cutting out all this red tape.
Oh, she's unbelievable, man. So we've just got a great ball club.
Yeah.
And it's neat. It's neat to see when you're surrounded by talented people, mm-hmm. the things that can happen. And I'm just so proud to be working with the folks we're working with. And then we've got our rookie, the kid we brought in through the system, Sam Cradio, who's running transportation.
Oh, yes. Transportation.
And he's just doing a yeoman's job. He's one of the reasons why the discussion with the RTA has shifted and we're actually getting some productive discussions there.
All right, we're going to have CBS. The hard break is coming up in about a minute. You don't make New Year's resolutions, as I recall, do you?
I do.
Oh.
I do.
So what is it?
My New Year's resolution is to complete the Rocky Point Triathlon in April.
Hmm.
As when I turn 50 on my 50th birthday.
And maybe go to Ireland.
I'll probably do that this summer, yeah.
All right. All the best to you. I hope you have a happy new year, Paul.
Bill, happy new year. Thanks for having me on.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you so
much. Take a break right here. Midway Point of the Buckmaster Show on this midweek edition. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
I've known the Chavez family for 35 years, and thanks to Chavez since 67, you won't find any soft, saggy cushions at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Chavez since 67 can restuff your cushions with new, firm, high-density foam. What a difference that makes. They also offer full upholstery services. Give them a call at 520-795-8032 or check out the website ChavezSince67.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition, December 27th in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. For our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. I am so thankful and pleased to have a couple of dozen regular contributors to the Buckmaster Show. You can find all of their names and bios at buckmastershow.com. Father Robert Hendrickson is the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, and he is our Buckmaster Show contributor on faith and spirituality. Father Robert joins us now on the live line. Father Robert, you did, let's see, 7 services in less than 24 hours.
We did 7 on Sunday and then one more on Monday just for an extra little dose.
Oh,
of Christmas.
My. So, yeah, we've got kind of now a season in between Christmas and New Year's. But, you know, the Christmas season starts, of course, now seems like right way before even Halloween, and ends as soon as the New Year's decorations come out in the stores. But the early Christians celebrated Christmas from December 25th to January 6th, and the Christian calendar observes the 12 days that the three wise men traveled to follow the star of Bethlehem and find Jesus after his birth. On the 12th day of Christmas, Christians traditionally celebrate the Epiphany or the Three Kings Day. But in many ways, to a lot of people, Father Robert, Christmas is over. It's in the rearview mirror.
Well, I've always said, you know, if someone brought home a baby and you started tearing down the decorations the next day, it'd seem a little rude. You know what I mean? So it seems, you know, just spreading out the celebration a little bit just makes some common sense. But yeah, the 12 days of Christmas, you know, there were a whole series of religious feast days that as far back as the Middle Ages, you know, even the poorest classes would stop working for those 12 days. You know, and would decorate their homes and spend the time with their family, you know, and do all the things that we think are sort of luxuries, but were just sort of part of life, you know, for much of our history, especially obviously. And in England, some of these, you know, the traditions we've brought over to the United States, like the 12 days, kind of, you know, most of them kind of were solidified in England and came over with the colonies. But you know, it's the within those days you have you know, St. Stephen's Day is actually today, is the 26th, and that, you know, that commemorates the first martyr, St. Stephen, and then you know, that was a day when people would go out and give alms to the poor and things like that. And then the 27th was the feast of St. John, who was said to have miraculously drunk a glass of poisoned wine without becoming ill, and so because of that, people celebrated by drinking a lot of wine. So that's the reason. It was a very religious, holy reason. They drank a lot of wine that day. But and then, you know, all through there, you had what was called Childermas, which is actually the Feast of the Holy Innocents on the fourth day of Christmas, which commemorates the children who King Herod is alleged to have killed when he was trying to kill Jesus. And then, of course, you get to New Year's Eve and then New Year's Day. But anyway, so there's a whole series of different celebrations, and, you know, families would keep those in different ways. And in fact, it was kept in such a way that women would decorate things like their weaving looms and another kind of, you know, implements of homework. They would decorate those with sort of decorations so they couldn't be used in those 12 days. They'd be sort of covered in greenery or flowers and things like that.
There is no commercial tie-in that I know of. People, maybe in some cultures, I think Latin American cultures, people do give gifts on the Three Kings Day. But as far as the American cultural scene and commercialism, that's one of the reasons that Christmas kind of just ends, because the increasing emphasis of holiday spending has really outshined the Christian roots of in the public imagination anyway, leaving really only Christmas Day and Christmas Eve to celebrate.
Yeah, and you know, I think for most of the time, if you ask most people, would they rather have another, you know, back scratcher from Walmart, or would they rather have some more time with their family in those 12 days? They'd probably pick the time with their family. At least, you know, most people. I think we have taken things that should be the normal stuff of life, you know, the connection and time together. And we've made those extraordinary times, and we've taken, you know, and it's kind of an unfortunate shift in our culture, but that's the way of things. But my hope would be that as people value time more and more, and realize, you know, how short our time is with our loved ones, that perhaps more of an emphasis can be placed on the less material aspects of the holiday, but also recognizing that this time in our culture, we're not as religious as we used to be, and so also trying to make space for recognizing that fact. And so how do you celebrate these things also within the context of a pluralistic country? It's always a little bit of a tension there, but I don't think the best way to handle it is just to make everything about mass consumption.
Well, and that's coming from a guy that was the youngest head of marketing, you, at Brooks Brothers in the history of that revered company. And somebody bought the name, I guess, of Brooks Brothers, so they're still around. Is that kind of what you have heard?
Yeah, it's still around. It's sort of, I can't remember who owns it now, but yes, I have a lot to atone for. That's why I had to go into ministry. So that, you know.
I'm just curious at those meetings when you would sit around in those marketing meetings, and of course there was the big emphasis, obviously, on Christmas and what the rollout would look like. There was a feeling, probably, that. After Christmas, we got to really make the money up until Christmas Day, correct?
Oh, sure. I mean, for most companies, the name Black Friday, you know, a lot of times it's associated with, it's a bad day or a busy day or whatever. Mm-hmm. Black Friday, generally, is thought to have come about as a term because that's when most companies went into the black, when they became profitable over the course of a year. So that little stretch from the day after Thanksgiving until Christmas was crucial for a lot of businesses, you know. And so recognizing that is the case for many businesses, that's just a fact. But you know, the conversations we always had were sort of like, how do you help people have the perfect Christmas, right? So how do you make sure they're all dressed perfectly and you know that everyone's house to look like a catalog shot, so that was always our goal, but at the same time when you step back from it for just a second, you think, well, I wonder if that first Christmas was Mary's first perfect Christmas. Probably not, so luckily for most of us, the perfect Christmas was had 2,000 years ago, and now we can just celebrate that.
You know, this is a time that many of us really should pause, because when you think about it, Father Robert, there are few times in our culture to pause and consider the things that really matter in life. And perhaps we could spend a few moments talking about that. This kind of in-between time seems like a good time for reflection.
Yeah, I think of this time as time away from time, right? So where you're stepping back from the busyness of the day, the sort of pressing stuff, and able to reflect on the important stuff. And for most of us, pressing things crowd out important things in most of our day-to-day life. And so having this space and being intentional about carving it out, I think is really important. And it's not always possible. When I was working in retail, this was our busy season. We were working nonstop around this. And so it's not like everyone has the luxury of being able to carve out that time. But I think coming up with some intentional practices in this period is really important. And because we don't, when we don't take that time, our lives sort of go on to autopilot. And then before you know them, they've run their course. And we look back and we think, well, what was that all about? You know, and so if you don't do that measured, thoughtful, prayerful work of really considering who am I now, who am I in context of my relationships, how am I changing, how am I growing, where do I want to go from here, all that is part of a well-lived life. And I think that the constant pressure in our culture is to not do that kind of reflective work, And I think part of our sort of insurrection against that kind of mindlessness is to be intentional about carving out that time.
All right, Father Robert, stick around. We've got another segment with you. It's the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition, and we'll be back with Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at my church, St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're back live with you for a couple of days. Of course, we took Christmas off, and we took yesterday, St. Stephen's Day, also known as Boxing Day. So we're back live for a couple of days. With us on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. And before we get back with Father Robert, we want to thank one of our great sponsors who wants to thank you. All of our sponsors have had a wonderful 2023, and they're looking forward to 2024, and that includes Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It makes a great getaway. It's only about a three-hour drive, and it's a fun place. The elevation's 5,000 to 7,000 feet, kind of the same as Denver. So it's a great place to do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Check out their fine website, which is Southwest New Mexico, spelled out, .org. And you'll be very tempted by all the activities over there. Some great places to stay and to eat as well. New Mexican cuisine, where the question always comes down to, do you want red or do you want green for your chilies? So have some fun over in Silver City. Now, we continue with our conversation with Father Robert Hendrickson. Perhaps no time of the year, Father Robert, stirs up feelings of connection to those we love and who have loved us more than the holidays. Father Robert, is it more than nostalgia? There's something else at play, isn't there?
I think so. I mean, there's a word that gets translated in English as remembrance, and so for those members who go to church radio, they'll hear their clergy sometimes say, "Do this in remembrance of me," which is what Jesus says when he's talking about instituting the Last Supper. But that English is sort of a clumsy translation of that word remembrance, because the Greek word anamnesis, what it actually means is sort of memory alive all around us, and what it means is when he says do this in remembrance, it means do this in a way that brings alive this thing that I'm doing with you. And I actually think that's what the holidays generate in us is an anamnesis, a kind of a living memory around us where we step into the kind of stream of history that is our lives. Where all those memories come back alive, and I think that we, in our best moments, we nurture and cultivate those, and in our what we think of as nostalgia, I think sometimes it is those things staying alive within us, and that it's our sharing of those stories, that living memory, with those who come after us, that kind of creates that chain of connection that's so vital, and that is, I think, a part of what it means to kind of be fully alive, is to have that living history that kind of is who you are in many ways.
I want to explore that a little bit more. It sounds like you're saying it has a consuming quality that implies that we're really standing in the midst of the past alive all around us. It's a concept that's a little hard to grasp, but I think you're on to something, Father Robert.
Yeah, it's all of us have had, I was sitting in my office the other day and happened to be sort of looking around, and I looked over at one wall and I had a vestment, something that someone had given me, a dear priest who was in his 90s when he gave it to me, and he passed on not too long after that. Then I happened to look across the room at saw a book that was given to me, an altar book that was given to me by the priest who sponsored me for ordination. And then I happened to look down at my desk and I saw my prayer book that I used to sort of do daily prayers was given to me by my wife at my ordination. Now, you could look at all those things and just sort of see, well, there's a pretty vestment, there is a book, and here's another book. Or you can see the stories that are there. Right, and sort of see the relationships that are there, and that's those things. Sort of, your acknowledgement of the preciousness of those stories that are part of that gifting, I think is kind of part of what happens, I think, to us at the holidays. Is sort of we when we do our best to sort of hold on to the deeper meaning of the things we have and that we've been given, the moments, the gifts, and all of that. That's when I think the things really become sort of poignant and powerful. Is when we spend the time sort of really with the deeper meaning of things, and I think this is how God is at work in the world. I think simple things reveal something precious, about, and in our own tradition, we talk about bread and wine communicating Jesus's presence. We talk about the power of water to transform life and baptism. And so, the simple things are the way I think God works. And I think simple things are the way our lives acquire meaning too. That sort of, but it requires a bit of discipline. It's sort of like, studying art history. If you spend your time studying art, you begin to sort of see, oh, these brushstrokes indicate this is a Rembrandt, and you know something about that. Or you listen to a piece of music and you hear certain chords or strains, you think, oh, that's Bach or that's Beethoven. And I think part of our discipline as spiritual beings is that work of recognizing something deeper at work. But it requires kind of a discipline and a patience that we don't always have.
Jesus uttered a lot of very important words, but maybe those six words, "Do this in remembrance of me," are right up there with being some of the most important. Would you agree with that, Father Robert?
Some of the most important, and probably, if you think about it, probably the most obeyed command in history. I mean, you think about how many churches celebrate communion or the Last Supper or the Lord's Supper or however they term it from that time to today. And it's the kind of thing we do at the crowning of kings and that we do for the funerals of paupers. You know, it's this thing that is this deep connection back to the earliest days, in fact, you know, of our tradition. And so it's the kind of thing where when you spend a little bit of time thinking just what those words have meant for two millennia now, it's incredibly moving. But it's also one of those things that's easy to sort of breeze through, right? It's like the rest of our life. You know, sometimes you know, every time I celebrate communion, I it's not the most transcendent experience ever.
Mm-hmm.
But occasionally it is, right? Occasionally the full import of it just hits you. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about with these sort of memories and these other things around the holidays. Sometimes the full import and meaning of those moments just hits you in the right place. And I think part of our human, you know, thriving is being open to those moments happening and creating space for that to happen.
So do you make New Year's resolutions or how do you view that, Father Robert?
Well, I've had one New Year's resolution, several iterations of one New Year's resolution, which is, it tends to be, for the last couple of years, it has tended to be something around health and weight and all that sort of stuff. So hopefully we're getting beyond that, and I can pick some new ones pretty soon.
Did you make one last year?
I did. It had to do with losing weight and health and all that sort of stuff. And luckily, I managed to do a better job this past year of sticking to that than I have in previous years.
What would you like to leave us with, Father Robert, before we say goodbye?
Oh, the thing for me is to keep looking for hope in this time. I mean, it's so easy to get mired in the sort of animosities and anxieties of the world. And I think taking that time, you know, whether it's every morning and every evening or with every meal, whatever it is, just taking that time to create space for looking for hope and looking for sort of what's going well, not just in your life, but in the world around you, and sort of retuning ourselves to see the good again, which is something I think we're losing our capacity to do much too quickly.
I was at the Christmas Day service at St. Philip's, and one of the wonderful things about our parish is we are really welcoming to visitors, and there were a lot of visitors there, and I watched them, and they felt, they're visiting, but it's almost like they felt very comfortable in the environment, Father Robert.
Yeah, my hope is that always, you know, whenever I preach or whenever I do anything, I always think, what do I want someone to hear if this is their first or their last time in church?
Right.
What do I want them to go away with? And to me, that's the most important thing about the kind of life that I hope we cultivate at St. Philip's. It's the kind of place where someone can come to one time and feel like it's their home or come back to for the thousandth time and know it's their home.
All right, Father Robert Hendrickson, always a pleasure. I hope you and your lovely family have a wonderful New Year's, and we'll see you in the new year.
Thank you so much, and Merry Christmas Tide to everyone who's listening.
Okay, thank you very much, Father Robert Hendrickson, the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, and that's going to wrap up the Buckmaster Show. Back with you live again tomorrow. General Jeffrey Buchanan will be with us, weighing in on what his latest is on Ukraine and Israel, but also he's a game and fish agent, General Buchanan. So we'll talk a little game and fish and about the sandhill cranes and some other things. So that's going to be tomorrow, along with Bill Doley of Archaeology Southwest. So we've got a full show for you tomorrow. Hope you'll be with us in about 23 hours. Until then, Bill Buckmaster wishing everyone well.